We have a ton of new Apple stuff to talk about this week. Like, new stuff that's been released this week.
Sort of, right, yeah.
I mean, Alex, actually, it's kind of a slow week, but we do have a lot to talk about. We just had to be a little bit more intentional about how we were planning out our topics this week. But the first thing is kind of the follow-through on an announcement made after the iPad Pro and MacBook Air Mac Mini event, which was a footnote in the MacBook Air newsroom post that said that new GPU options for the MacBook Pro would be coming next month. That was last month, and now it's next month. They didn't give a date, I don't think, or maybe they did in some countries, but not all. But
they said late November is what they quoted.
Yeah, our own Michael Stieber had heard, I think through the retail channel, that it was going to be November the 14th, and indeed that was exactly the date. So now those are out. We've got more details, including pricing. So what's new there?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting update because obviously they made a big fanfare about the 2018 MacBook Pros when they first came out in July. And at the time, everyone was a bit disappointed that they weren't having better GPU options available. They were still the Radeon Pro series. And everyone was complaining and Apple didn't say anything. But then obviously 4 months later, these new GPUs are now available as options to the MacBook Pro. And this is the first laptop. These are the first laptops to have these specific GPUs in them. So I think Apple probably, when they planned the MacBook Pro 2018, they thought the timelines would sync up, and then either they released slightly earlier or they slipped or something, you know, so they fell out of favor and they just always wanted to do this. And that's why the timing's a bit like out of the blue. If you previously purchased a 2018 MacBook Pro, you don't have to get too upset about the situation because these are not built-in standard options. These are upgrade options only available on the highest base configuration. And the default high-end base comes with a Radeon 560X. That's the old card. That was the highest end you could get before. Now you can get a Radeon Pro Vega 16 or a Radeon Pro Vega 20. But you can't spec up a base model 15-inch. You have to get the high-end MacBook Pro, which starts at like $2,700 by itself, and then choose whether you want the Vega 16 or the Vega 20. And the pricing for these options is okay. It's $250 and $350. I saw some people complaining that like they thought the high-end options were just going to come standard now with these Vega chips. Well, that didn't happen. given Apple's recent acclimatization towards expensive pricing, I can't think you can really blame them. I think you couldn't really expect that to happen. These aren't ridiculously priced. Like, they're okay. And Apple says that they provide up to 60% better graphics than the Radeon Pro 560Xs that they replaced. Because these machines have only just come out, we don't have benchmarks and stuff yet to confirm it. If you're an average MacBook Pro buyer, you're probably fine with the normal configs. Obviously, if you have specific graphics heavy needs, then these are what the GPUs are for. But basically, if you were complaining in July about the graphics, then this is what you need to consider. But again, because obviously Macs aren't very good for stuff like games, and you have eGPU options if you want, or you have obviously the desktop, you know, iMac Pro options, I think the need for for GPU stuff is less on the MacBook Pro line than it would be on, say, like the high-end Windows workstation lines, just because that's how it works out. And if you don't think you're going to need the extra GPU horsepower, then you shouldn't option them in, because they will use more battery life than if you just get the lower-end cars that use less power. You can eke out a bit more battery life.
Yeah,
so I think it's cool. They come with 4 gigs of HBM2 memory, which is new, because obviously for the longest time GPUs come with dedicated video RAM, and usually that's like GDDR5. These cards come with HBM2, which stands for high bandwidth memory, so they're faster than the GDDR2 stuff. But that was funny because I hadn't seen that acronym before.
Yeah, and GDDR5, I'm looking at it right now, is graphics double data rate type 5. So synchronous RAM, random access memory. So, and this is, none of the 13-inch ones have this option, so only the 15-inch ones. And then with the 15-inch, there's two options you can buy of like the base model of each, and then it's the higher end of the base. It's the higher, not the base model 15-inch, but the higher end one. and then you've got to configure it in. So, yeah, I mean, people were when the news came out, they were like, should you know, await and buy that. It's like, if you need it, then you know that you need it. And then if you bought most of the 2018 MacBook Pros, you're not missing out, because if it's any 13-inch, you couldn't have this option anyway. And if it's a 15-inch and you bought the base model, then you need to go up processor and SSD and all the other things to even get it.
Even if you had the base model and then upgraded the storage, you still wouldn't be applicable for these GPU options, which right. obviously are also additional purchases. So it's not even like you've lost out, really.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it gives a new option there for people that wanted it just several months after they were released. But
if you don't have price concerns, then this answers, I think, the complaints from when these laptops debuted about the graphics being weaker than expected.
Yep.
Speaking of price, quickly, the modern Mac SSD pricing is getting a bit ridiculous. The 1 terabyte SSD option on a MacBook Pro is $800 on its own. You can go $4. If you buy like the highest end Mac Mini, like half of the cost of the thing is just the SSD. And yes, Apple's SSDs are very, very fast with all the T2 memory storage controller stuff, which gives them like 2.5 gig reads, 2.5 gig writes. But the hardware beneath it all is the same NVMe 2 chips that are used across the industry. And most new Windows PCs can also rival the kind of speeds. And if you just want to spec it out yourself, like, there's always obviously the argument if you build a computer yourself, it's going to be cheaper than if you're buying a pre-built one. That's obviously always been true. Similarly, Apple's Macs have always been more expensive than the direct Windows competitors in general. But these SSDs are getting kind of insane. They're basically 4 times the price of what they should be, I think. Like, mm-hmm. the 4 terabyte SSD options are like, or the 2 terabyte SSD, they're like $2,000, $3,000. And they probably should be like $1,000 tops for what they are. Like, I don't quite understand how Apple is justifying this with themselves. Like, they are fast, but most people would prefer the storage over the, like, because speed has diminishing returns, because an SSD is fast when it's a 500 megabyte SSD read speeds. An SSD is faster when it's a gigabyte, but when you're getting up to, like, the difference between 1 gig read speeds and 2 gig read speeds is minimal for a lot of tasks, versus you're stuck with a 500 gig SSD because of budget when you could have had a slightly slow one maybe, and it also be twice the storage size and have a terabyte. Like, the current situation is not great, in my opinion. Everything else on the like, all the other options are expensive but not ridiculous. Like, I think the SSD ones are nearing insane markups.
and it's because they're giving you like the highest spec SSDs when there's fast SSDs that are cheaper, that you know, like, it's not the difference in a spinning hard drive and an SSD necessarily. Like, that's dramatically different in how fast it is to use, but it's just like different speeds of SSDs. And you think that people would prioritize higher storage, not state-of-the-art SSDs, to what they're offering. Like,
yeah, because, like, if you really want to make the argument, you probably can make the argument that these are the fast ones available and hence they can have a premium, but they can still be very, very fast and accommodate 99% of users for half the price. You know, like, I think Apple likes putting their markup on them because they like it exaggerating the full disk encryption and all that. They kind of incorporate that into the price, even though it's, you know, not really the same component stuff. Yeah. It's like, they bundle it in, like, oh, you get zero cost file encryption and disk encryption and super fast read and write speeds. But, like, practically, if you're going to buy a MacBook Pro, if you could get a terabyte SSD for like $300, $400 versus $1,000, like $800 to $1,000, it'd be a lot more approachable, I think. Like, the prices are a bit out of whack at the moment. They need to be like halved at least, I think. Yeah. And they probably will happen. It's just clearly on this generation, they're like squeezing squeezing the pennies out of you.
Yeah, I like the idea of there being like state of the art as good as you can get options out there, and especially in like the high end and the pro machines. But it kind of makes me think about the MacBook Pro. Like it can be used by students and lots of professionals who don't need, like they might need a lot of storage and not need to risk like using a hard disk drive. But may not need the premium price of like the state of the art SSD, and so
which are also marked up over the comparable,
sure,
Windows competition that would also be faster speeds as well. Like obviously, I'm thinking a bit selfishly here. I'm still on a 2016 MacBook Pro, which has obviously got SSDs in it, but they're not as fast as the newer ones. They're not as fast as the newest ones. But I'm not like sitting here all day going, oh, I wish my SSD was faster. It's, when I'm looking to upgrade again, I'll be way more satisfied if I could get extra storage versus getting extra speed. The prices will come down eventually, but these current T2 SSD pricing are nearing exorbitant, really. Like, they are ridiculously highly priced. Like, if you don't spec up the base storage on the Mac line, you're like, oh, this is all right. And then you change the storage and it's like, you can like double the price of your computer without like blinking. It's and it's not quite justified, really. So I just thought I'd like point that out.
Yeah. I feel like in the MacBook Pro especially suffers from this, that there's definitely room for a higher end MacBook Pro in other regards, like a MacBook Pro, don't call it that, but something like that, where there is the iMac and then there is the iMac Pro. Like the MacBook Pro is definitely higher end in terms of like the specs than the MacBook and MacBook Air, but that there could be like another version that takes advantage of like makes different choices for the ports. Like all of the new Mac desktops have USB-A and USB-C with Thunderbolt 3. Like you could have a MacBook Pro that does that. And has, it can be way more expensive, but then like that's the one with the super fast SSDs. And then the other MacBook Pros have like, more traditional SSDs that are not as expensive, but you can value storage and get a good price.
Or maybe they have bigger batteries and stuff, sure, like that. Yeah. Like there are different, there are all these different configurations, and it's definitely a decision and product marketing problem as to which options they choose. But unlike iOS devices, the MacBook Pros can be spec'd in different ways. Like, they could make the MacBook Pro more like the Mac Mini, and that you get different, more options on everything.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Versus, oh, you have to have the fastest SSDs in these four storage configurations. Like, you could maybe offer last gen SSDs that are twice the capacity for the same price.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me. And then rewinding back a moment to the GPU situation, there is one more thing that Apple announced that's coming in November that hasn't been released yet, which is the Blackmagic eGPU Pro. And this is an external GPU that you can connect to any MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, Mac Mini, iMac that has Thunderbolt 3. And it's an external GPU. So if you want to beef up the power of your graphics processor, then this is a solution for you. Apple already sells the Blackmagic eGPU for $700, and it has one of those a Radeon Pro 580 with 8 gigabytes of memory, and that's the GDDR5 memory. The Pro version is it's $1,200. It's coming this month, and that's what everyone's waiting on in the eGPU space. It's coming late November, and it is the Radeon RX Vega 56 graphics. So earlier we were talking about MacBook Pros with Vega 16 and 20, right? And this is Vega 56, and those had 4 gigabytes of memory of the HBM2 memory. This is 8 gigabytes, and I believe this is a match of what's in the base model iMac Pro, right? Like
yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah, it's like this is that processor in the iMac Pro, the base model iMac Pro. So it's that level, but like you can literally add it to a Mac Mini or a MacBook Pro if you didn't get a chance to have this new GPU option. Well, here's an even more high end option. It's just not portable. Or even like in one of the product shots on the store page for it, they show it with the MacBook Air, which is kind of hilarious to me because they're both $1,200 each, like the MacBook Air and this eGPU Pro. But the fact of the matter is, like, the MacBook Air has Thunderbolt 3 ports, so it can connect to it. So that's why they show it. And they show it with, like, gaming. So I guess that's what they have in mind in that regard versus, like, video editing or something in that area.
If you're a consumer,
yeah,
you can buy a gaming computer for well under $1,200.
Or $2,400 in this way, where it's
But let's say you already have a MacBook Air, right, and you want to suddenly get into games,
sure,
right? You can get a really nice spec PC that will play games way better than a MacBook Air with or without any GPU.
You're in that space, right, where you actually own a PC for gaming.
That is correct. Okay, I use a Windows computer. A Windows computer almost every day just to play basically one PC game. And I basically got a big tower. It's like the same size as the old Mac cheese grater, that generation of Mac Pro. It's basically one of them, but it's a Windows computer.
Yeah.
And that was under $1,000 all in, and it is still way better at gaming than I think anything that Apple sells today. So that is the sad truth. If you're really into game stuff, buy a Windows computer. The eGPU is more focused to, like, video editing, really. Yeah. And I think a lot of it is that companies will buy them so that if you just bring on the go and then you come and you bring your laptop from home with you and you want to happen to do some work, you can plug them in. I don't really see... maybe I'm short-sighted and I'm not, like, a video producer myself, but it seems like if you are, like, a home video kind of guy, like Jeff on our YouTube channel or whoever... Like, why wouldn't you just get, like, an iMac Pro in the first place? Or an iMac. Like, the MacBook Air plus eGPU combo seems very optimistic to me.
Yeah. And they have the product shot, like, you know, on the product page as, like, an example, but because it's compatible.
You tweeted earlier this week a picture of the Apple TV with a Bluetooth keyboard. Yeah. And it's like, theoretically you can connect Bluetooth keyboards to the Apple TV, and you have done been able to for a long time, but of course nobody does. Like, they like showing the pictures.
Now you're gonna hear from everyone who does. But when this comes, so this will be sometime in November, it didn't match up with the dates of the new GPU options in the MacBook Pro. But it also has, two Thunderbolt 3 ports and four USB 3 ports and HDMI 2 and DisplayPort 1.4. And it can deliver up to 85 watts of power over USB-C. So there's a little bit more than just the GPU. This is a relatively new space for Apple too. It's like supporting external GPUs that was added in the last version of macOS, and then so, like, macOS Mojave is the first version that ships with it from day one, and I think even, like, Final Cut Pro only recently, like, over the summer got support for it. So
yeah, because there are, and plugging an eGPU with a cable has transmission cost, right? Like, it cannot match the same performance profile as if you have it directly on the board inside the computer, because it's, you know, Thunderbolt 3 is fast, but you still have to send the memory out somewhere, and there's latency in that system. And certain apps, like, often at the moment, if you have an eGPU with a MacBook Pro, you have to, like, basically use it to drive a display, or you use it to drive these specific apps that are optimized for it. Like, it's not quite as simple as you plug the eGPU, then every single task on your computer is driven by the GPU now. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't quite work like that. Like, the internal display can't be driven by the external GPU, for instance. So there's... And even, like, when you plug in an eGPU, it's not seamless. Like, if you have a MacBook Pro, you get discrete graphics switching. You get the integrated graphics, and you get the graphics card, and the MacBook Pro is smart enough to switch seamlessly between those two as it deems it necessary, and you don't see any, like, flicker on the screen. If you plug an eGPU in, you do get, like, several seconds of flicker and stuff moving around, so it's not quite as effortless as they like as just plugging in one cable, for instance. And it is niche. It's cool that they have it, and I'm sure there are definitely, like, video shops that take advantage of it, but it's not a mass market thing, I don't think.
Yeah, it is anything though in terms of, like, how Apple, especially of late, is not big on upgrading your current hardware. Like, you need to buy new hardware. In this case, you can literally have a MacBook Air or Pro with Thunderbolt 3, or an iMac with Thunderbolt 3, and then you can have the same graphics processor as the iMac Pro without buying the iMac Pro. So that's pretty nice. If you want to upgrade, like if you need to upgrade graphics on your machine, then this is a way to do that. And then you get some nice ports too. So
maybe there are like, we would laugh a bit at MacBook Air thing, but maybe you have your, if you're really into the Apple ecosystem and you really like your MacBook Air, but you're also like a photo editor or a video editor, you could have your eGPU at home. Your MacBook Air goes in travel. When you come to your desk, you plug it in and it acts like a mini dock, and it can go to an external display and you can use it that way. So there are definitely ways of doing it. But again, it's like, buy an iMac. If you just buy an iMac, it'll be nicer.
In this case, buy the iMac Pro is what the sell would be. But yeah, so that's coming sometime this month. Also this week we got news of a lot of new Apple Watch Band colors. The first part of this story is kind of interesting. So Nike is on Friday, I guess that's when we released the episode as well, releasing new colors of the Sport Loop and Sport Bands. So the Sport Loop, that the Nike Reflective Sport Loop, that's the one that when you shine light on, like in the dark, it reflects like big time, like it lights up pretty much. And the idea is if you're running at night, you can increase your visibility with this band. And it's only been available in a color called Summit White and then just regular black. Now it will come in smoky mauve, which is like a dark pink color, and celestial teal. And then there also will be a new Nike Sport Loop, which is the one with the cutouts for breathability, called Olive Flak, and it's like army green color. and these were like really low key announced. It was just in the news feed within the Nike shopping app on the iPhone. And to buy these, you've got to be a Nike Plus member, which is free, but you just got to have a Nike Plus account, basically. And then you can only buy it through the Nike app on the iPhone, from what we can tell. And my guess is you've got to buy like the whole watch, not just the band. It's a little bit unclear from the announcement, but Apple or Nike, they've not sold the reflective Nike Sport Loop separately yet. And there's no indication that starting tomorrow that will change, especially for new colors. So I think it's going to be you have to buy the whole watch to get these bands. So then it's like less enticing. But unless
they might be sold separately eventually. You had the reflective band, right, for a little while?
Yeah, well, I purchased one on eBay just to like get to do a hands-on story with it and try it out. And then I sold it back on eBay after I was done because the Sport Loop, I like it. It's neat. It's just not for me. And my biggest complaint with it is like I like that the width of the Sport Band narrows from the connector, but the Sport Loop is like it's much wider, and so it just feels bigger on my wrist, and it feels like I'm wearing like a different watch than mine. So I didn't keep it, but I like the reflective nature of it and the new colors, this like dark pink and this teal color. Those will be neat, and then the army green I think will be pretty popular. Olive flat.
You know what they should make?
What's that?
Glow in the dark sport bands.
Yeah, people have been asking for that. I mean, the sport band material is a good candidate for that, right? Like it feels like that already. So,
you go to a rave with your Apple Watch, just on a glow in the dark band.
Any of that material, you shake it up and it lights up. So, and then as Nike sport bands, these all like, I think they already have matching watch faces. So you can probably look at your Apple Watch Nike Plus and look at all the color options. And if there hasn't been a band made for that color previously, then there's probably a feature candidate for a band in that color. So there'll be matching faces for all of these. They're already out there. But you need the Nike iPhone app to buy and to be a Nike Plus member. So that's a thing now. Like previously, they did the bone colored sport band. Like it wasn't a sport loop, it was just the sport Nike sport band. And it was a space gray watch with like an off white color Nike sport band, and it had a silver pin. And it was part of Nike Lab, which is like experimental design kind of thing that Nike does. And then they've had like exclusive colors with Nike sport or Nike watches, but this is kind of a first of its kind in that regard, as in terms of how they're selling it. Like, I don't think you can go to an Apple store and buy this configuration as far as we know yet. And then Apple has released, like, you can actually buy the first product red sport loop for Apple Watch. So again, it's the sport loop band. It's the stretchy material that has like the Velcro style hook and loop enclosure. They did similar with this red sport band that's on the loop a while ago, where like they used an event and like new watch releases to put that out there like on its own. They're just selling it on its own, and it's already available like as of I think Wednesday. You can buy it, and again, it's product red, so then a portion of the proceeds go to the Global Fund to Fight AIDS in Africa. This is interesting.
It's a cool color.
Yeah, it's a cool color. If you have an LTE watch, like it matches the red of that too, of the, either the ring or big splotch. And like I like this idea. I wish that the red sport band that isn't the sport loop was available with a black pen, just not the silver pen, because I think the red and gold color, like I've got the stainless steel gold Apple Watch. Red goes really nice with it. Like it's a cool color. It's kind of like the Chinese New Year theme. And I think it's just like a nice winter color anyway, but I wouldn't want to have the existing red sport band with a silver pen, because that would just kind of bother me a little bit. But if it were black, it wouldn't, or if it were gold, obviously. In this case, you don't have to worry about that because there's no pen. It's just the plastic of the little clasp, and then it seals by the Velcro style stuff. So yeah, some new stuff out there, and it's already available. There was also something interesting that happened, which is everyone in covers Apple, press probably gets these alerts when there's a new FCC filing for a new Apple product. And there was an FCC listing for an Apple magnetic charging dock. And I saw at least one publication say like AirPower finally gets FCC approval based on that. And that was just totally incorrect. And then other people like actually ran the story, which was, and we chose not to because it wasn't really anything that anyone needs to know. I just think it's like funny that it became AirPower FCC approved, and that's just wrong. But what it is the $79 Apple Watch magnetic charging dock had to go through some change that required FCC approval and like in how it charges. So something internal about it. Nothing changed in terms of like the cable it uses. It's still USB-A to Lightning to power the back of it. And this is the same like flip up puck, or it can lay flat and you can put your watch on it flat. But it got an update, and it even made it move up in the Apple accessory like rank by new listing, and it got a new like model number, product number, but it's the same old thing.
They must have found some new material or something inside it to make it different, produce it differently. It's kind of like how they occasionally change their like USB-C cables. Like mm-hmm. They don't announce it obviously, but every like 8 months they'll change the model numbers in the USB-C cables, and they've changed suppliers, and they just change how the processes work. And minor ways.
Yeah.
Or like they changed that 29 watt charge brick to a 30 watt one randomly in the middle of March.
Right.
Like, oh, and that obviously all that stuff has to go through FCC approval when it, it's because although there's no new features, if it's still requiring these different radios and magnets and all that sort of stuff, it still has to get legal sign off.
Yeah, and Apple's pretty generous with like when they label something new, but they didn't even label this as new like on the Apple Store website. But when we think about that, like that charging dock used to come with the ceramic Apple Watch edition, and like for both years of that, but then that went away, so now it doesn't come with any Apple Watch. It's only sold separately, but it was always available separately anyway. But definitely not AirPower. And if you have that, there's zero need to go out and replace it. It's the same thing, same price, same everything.
I tell you what, AirPower.
Yeah,
we're not exactly looking good, are we?
Apple did
an AirPower release.
Yeah, Apple published their annual gift guide, which is just like a collection. It's like basically like a Apple Store catalog of like things that you should buy as for gifts for the holidays for people, and. The AirPods, as they currently are sold, made a lot of appearances throughout that, which made me think that pretty much writes off AirPower for the year. Like, if they're not going to release AirPower, they're not going to update the AirPods with wireless charging, there's not going to be new AirPods this year. It's like, and another funny thing about that was HomePod was heavily, included in their gift guide, obviously. And they probably meant to have that last year because, like, HomePod was supposed to be out last December,
yeah,
as a big holiday present, I guess, gift, and then now they actually can do that with more features than what would have been, the thing with AirPower is like you had a theory a few episodes ago that was if Apple's going to release it this year, they'll tell us at the event or like give a press statement around the event on that day.
Yeah, the October event.
Yeah, to be sometime this year, you know, specific date or by the end of the year or
on it wouldn't have to be shipping the next day, but it would go from vague 2018 to, you know, early November, late December.
Yeah, yeah.
December.
And like, that didn't happen.
Some zoning in on the release date, yeah. And they didn't say anything.
But if it's coming this year, that would have happened, and that didn't happen. And the other part of your theory was, if it's not coming this year, they already know it, but they're not going to tell us on that day. That's the good news day. They're going to wait until like some Friday when they can bear the news. And, you know, we've been counting on the Fridays. We're running out of Fridays for this year before they have to put out their announcement of we need a little more time, or something much worse than that. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we're recording on Thursday evening. I think the Friday before Thanksgiving, like when everyone's kind of away for the week, is pretty good time to bury the news. So maybe
because last week they had some recall announcements.
Yeah.
On the very end of Friday, they had iPhone 10 Ghost Touches and some MacBook Pro SSDs would just lose your data. So that's
some 13-inch MacBook Pros sold between last summer and this summer will lose your data, and you can get a free SSD replacement.
Yeah, and obviously they don't announce that when everyone's online. They try and do it the latest working hours possible on a Friday, which they've relied on that little trick many times before. But they are running out of Fridays to announce bad news for the AirPower stuff. Like, all this time we've been on the premise of, you know, it's not late until it's the end of 2018, and we're finally getting there where they... Because after, like, a couple of weeks in December, then all of Apple corporate like leaves for holiday time. Obviously, you have the Thanksgiving holidays as well. Like, they have not many occasions left to announce either the delay or the death of AirPower, and maybe a delay on the ECG app. Like, we're still seeing like iOS watchOS betas and stuff, but none of them have the ECG app is still missing in action.
Yeah, so that's the electrocardiogram app for the Apple Watch Series 4, which takes advantage of the new hardware that can do an ECG from the Apple Watch. But Tim Cook did say in the earnings call a few weeks ago that it's like coming this year.
Yeah, they did it in the earnings call. They did mention that, unlike the AirPower stuff.
Yeah, unlike AirPower, which hasn't been spoken of this year, since the iPhone 10 event. So
this is completely unsubstantiated. But maybe if the charging case does work with any Qi charger, they release that, which wouldn't be contradictory to their gift guide because it's not bundled. It's an additional extra that you can buy if you want to. Right. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they cancel the AirPower project.
Oh.
They bury the news by going, giving you something new. You can charge your AirPods wirelessly. But they also include a line at the very bottom of the press release. AirPower is indefinitely delayed or something. You know, they'll use clever words.
I feel like an indefinite delay of AirPower would require like one of those special, like you know, Phil Schiller talks to some media outlet, you know, of favor. And
you know what it was? Yeah. They were just stuck in a thermal corner.
They'll have an AirPower roundtable. what it'll be.
I think what's going to happen is eventually they will, if the product is as it was announced is like actually unfeasible, they'll probably reuse the AirPower brand name for like a product that is more feasible and less interesting, but actually
like what middle ground is there from like what there is now? Like, would it just be Apple's version of a Qi charger?
You could do a watch charger and an iPhone charger, and maybe they in like one little pad, and they don't let you place it anywhere and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's probably they could, like, for instance, maybe you could charge. It's seamless in the point that you can put an iPhone or a watch on it, but there's not like a little hole in the center where, you know, like for now, if everyone's doing like watch charges, they have to just make a big cutout in the pad. Like, maybe you can put a watch there or you can put a phone there. But it's still not. It's not like a massive pad where you can put three devices. Maybe it's only two devices. You know, there's probably reductions that they could make to make something more shippable.
Yeah, like, you know, if like the iPhone works with Qi, if the AirPower charging case or the AirPods charging case does too, that's a positive. But we don't know yet. And if the Apple Watch would move to also working with Qi, like in some way, that'd be a big win. Because then you could have one of those. You know, like IKEA style, X marks the spot. Put your device here to charge. One cord goes to it, but you know, you've got three, basically like three different charges within that, then that would, I think that would be okay.
Yeah. And that would be more like a copycat product rather than an innovation.
Yeah.
But it would be the Apple version of the IKEA charger, essentially. Do you know, like, if AirPower is unreasonable, then they're probably still going to want to make some sort of wireless charger of their own. Like, it feels like something they'd want to ship. Because they do the magnetic dock charger for the Apple Watch, right? So,
yeah.
I feel like they want to do some sort of iPhone charger eventually.
Yeah.
And if it can't be AirPower, they're going to have to come up with some, you know, reduced alternative.
Those combination chargers, like there have always been like these combination chargers from like Belkin and other companies that have a lightning jack that you like dock your iPhone on to charge, and then either it includes a charging puck for the Apple Watch, or you supply your own in like a specific area. Those are getting nicer and nicer. Like Belkin just put out one that costs like $160, like crazily priced. But it's not lightning, it's Qi. So it's like a big Qi pad. And like you just lay your phone, it stands, make your phone like upright.
It's portrait, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you like, you know, it's like on your bedside, like you just like put it there, or your desk, I guess. And then it also like includes the charging puck for the Apple Watch. It comes in black and white, and the white one's like all in color. And then the black one is like the iPhone part looks nice, and then the watch side is like white, so it doesn't really match as well. But like those are getting nicer and nicer, and like, you know, I wouldn't buy one right now because like, what if AirPower comes out and they're expensive, like $160 for that. Like for $60, you can get just the Qi version, like, or just like the Qi part for your phone, and then just like use your Apple Watch charging cable. You know, like you're paying $100 for like the all in one part of it. But those are getting nicer and nicer, and like, you know, I don't know, we definitely cannot end 2018 without Apple saying something about this, because like the annoying line has been out, you know, but true has been AirPower isn't late yet, technically. Like they said sometime, they said next year is a sneak peek of something coming in 2018, and it just looks like it's not going to happen. So I don't think we need to go into like January with nothing said about this at all. Like then that is bad. That is not just awkward.
Yeah, they'll definitely acknowledge it. They'll definitely acknowledge the problem before the end of the year. Like that, I don't think there's any case where they've delayed something and they're not giving a heads up about it.
They have a lot of experience with promising, like whether it's iTunes Match initially, AirPods, HomePod, like there's a lot of things that get announced with a date, and they need like 6 more weeks, and then it will be right. You know, there's a long history of that. So,
but they always give you an update before the time frame's out. Yeah. Like you're never left stranded. It's always, we'll hook you on. We just need a little bit more time.
Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned on the podcast, but it was a recent like news release that Sonos had announced last year that sometime this year, Sonos speakers that happen to work with Amazon's voice assistant would add Google's assistant, that's what it's called. And they're going to miss that deadline this year. And like their statement sounded so much like an Apple statement of like, we need a little more time. Like they even invited like people to come beta test it now and like give a lot of feedback. But it was like that statement could have been like the AirPower delayed statement. It's so close. So not just Apple, other people, happens to other people. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by PDF Pen, the ultimate tool for editing PDFs on your iPhone, iPad, and Mac. Using PDF Pen, you can go paperless with scanning and OCR, mark up and highlight PDFs, search and redact sensitive information such as account numbers, correct text and PDFs without the originals, insert, remove, and reorder pages, move and adjust images, and record and playback audio annotations. Or grab PDF Pen Pro to do even more, such as create fillable PDF forms, even automatically, create and edit table of contents, convert websites into PDFs, add and edit document permissions, and much more. The latest version, PDF Pen 10, that's the numeral, not the letter X, Apple, brings a load of even more new features, including the ability to add watermarks, insert headers and footers, and OCR multiple documents and batch with PDF Pen Pro. The new precision edit tool selects, moves, resizes, and deletes line art and text, and PDF 10 improves moving and sizing images and enhancing page number styling. It also adds a new library image item view, prettier drawing colors, and new text menu options.
Learn much more about PDF Pen for iPhone, iPad, and Mac at smilesoftware.com/podcast. Again, that's smilesoftware.com/podcast to learn more.
Something else new this week is Spotify for the Apple Watch, sort of. We got wind of this through, I guess, people that are just already on the test flight for Spotify for iOS. They happened to notice, oh, now we have an Apple Watch app through test flight. And, you know, roughly a week later, a week and a half later, it's on the App Store. Spotify calls it the first version of its Apple Watch app. And what that means is it has very limited features. When people think of Spotify for the Apple Watch, they want two things, I think. They want streaming over Wi-Fi and cellular with just the Apple Watch and not the iPhone. And they want to send music from Spotify on the iPhone to Spotify on the Apple Watch and save
music offline.
Yeah, save a playlist, save an album, save a podcast, because Spotify can do podcasts, including this one. But that's not what they did. It's the least they could do several years ago, which is have a remote app, you know, a remote control on your Apple Watch, which is play, pause, skip, change speed if it's a podcast. The most interesting thing about it is you, like, there's some level of browsing that you can do, which is convenient. You know, like, you know, before there was Apple Music streaming, that was convenient for Apple Music, for like the music app too. So you can do some browsing. You can also change the Spotify Connect source. So like if you have your, and it all requires to have the iPhone within range. Like you can't just have the watch and do this. But like if the iPhone is within range, you can use the Spotify Apple Watch app to change the output source with Spotify Connect, which can be like that. That's a pretty like versatile system. So you can do some pretty creative things with that. It's not like AirPlay where it like changes where the phone's sending it to. It's like sends it over the internet or something. It's,
yeah, like Spotify Connect, you can control your computer at home.
Yeah,
when you're out and about, because it's like, and it's not nice streaming. It's not streaming the music over the internet. It's just streaming the controls over the internet.
Correct. Yeah. So that comes to the Apple Watch, which is like the most interesting thing about the whole thing. And they do say in their, they have like a little, they have a little announcement about it. And they say that like offline's coming. While we continue to innovate, we have many exciting things coming up, including the ability to listen to your music and podcasts offline, but they don't mention streaming. So it's like, okay.
And it doesn't even support the new watch screen sizes, right?
Yeah, that was the dumbest thing about the whole thing, was like, here is this new watch that people have wanted for years, and now they've decided they're going to make it, and it's in a set. Like, it's got the borders around it. Like, they've not designed this for the new Apple Watches that were released last month, and that part is crazy.
So it's essentially a Spotify-branded now playing screen that doesn't fill the screen on the Apple Watch Series 4.
Yeah.
That is the current proposition. And you can browse and pick a different playlist if you want to.
Like, I mean, their screenshots on the App Store are like inset. Like, you know, they've got the bezels around it, the fake border. So that part's annoying. But when it gets offline playback, like support, that'll be a little bit better. But it'll be the method where you've got to manually sync it, and that takes a little while. Like, that's what Overcast and Audible are doing versus like Apple's podcast app or Apple Music, where you can stream over Wi-Fi or cellular. So it's not quite as convenient as like the built-in stuff. And Apple,
at least there's a story about a company adding a watch app.
Yeah, kind of removing it.
Reverses a long string of people getting out of that business.
Yeah. The big twist on all of this is that Chaos T on Twitter, he's at KHAOST. He makes some HomeKit apps for Apple Watch, for HomeKit apps for iOS and Apple Watch, and he's a pretty experienced developer that knows kind of the ins and outs of all this stuff. And when he saw the news of the test flight and how limited that app was, which was what they ended up releasing, he took like the weekend to make an Apple Watch app for Spotify that could do what everybody wants, which is stream music over Wi-Fi and LTE, using like existing Apple Watch APIs, like that developers can do. Like, the only thing that was like gray area here, I think, was like that it was using Spotify's service and that needs Spotify's approval, like, for.
So the Spotify API that a developer can get access to officially lets anyone make essentially a remote control app, right?
Sure.
So you can browse, you can do previews of songs, you can get track information, you can add to the library, and you can control another Spotify client, but you cannot get access to actual music file streams. Now they have platform SDKs, so you can like embed a Spotify player into a different app, but like on the Apple Watch, what you need is access to like the file, right? That is the audio track.
Right.
And the official Spotify API does not let you get that. What Chaos did is kind of emulate the desktop client and let you log in and still like essentially pretend it was the desktop client to decrypt the file stream to then get the raw music tracks that obviously it's a violation of the terms of service, of the Spotify terms of service. But the key point here is that it does not violate any rules of Apple's app review.
Right. He got this app.
Apart from the fact that the Apple's app review says that you can't use third-party content that you don't have the rights for. So I get, but if Chaos was Spotify,
yeah,
they could release this application on the store and Apple would not have any grounds to reject it. Like, it's perfectly legitimate watch kit application.
Right. His point was Spotify could do this if they wanted to, like, and yeah, it would take a few hours to do. It would take like a whole team of people. So he built it, he released it, Apple approved it, you know, which is like, again, the gray area is there is like, you don't really have the rights to like to this use of their API, Spotify's API. Like, in terms of the Apple area, like it's all above board except for that part, like, that he is in Spotify. But Spotify could absolutely release an app that lets you stream Spotify's music over Wi-Fi and cellular onto the Apple Watch without the iPhone. This was a fantastic way to prove that. And unfortunately, he did get the notice, not from Apple, but from Spotify, that this was misusing their API. And so he needed to take it down by the end of the day. And so it's gone. But I think it was a fantastic way to prove a point of like, Spotify can definitely do this. There's nothing that Apple's preventing them from doing. And in the same regard, like the same shit for Apple TV, like Spotify can make an Apple TV app. That's been true for several years now, and they haven't. So a lot of times it's easy to kind of blame Apple. It's like, why isn't Apple letting you know X company do this? And in this case, like, Spotify just doesn't want to, and they're making a big deal about like what little they have done now. So I don't know if you want to stream music on the Apple Watch, like, use Apple Music. that's my answer. You got to really have a reason to want to use Spotify instead. To like go through this hassle. But so many people were excited about the news of Spotify for Apple Watch, but it was just immediately, you know, temperature reduced because it's just a remote, basically. And like,
yeah. I don't get why they waited so long to do it and then they finally decided to release it, but without like offline playback. Because that's kind of like the minimum bar of what people want, right? They want mm-hmm. to be able to save some tracks from their Spotify account to their watch and play them when they go on a run or whatever. Yeah. But they waited like years and then they released literally a remote control app that the now playing screen built into the watch could basically do exactly the same thing.
I don't know. Just don't use Spotify if you care about this stuff, I guess. But it seems to me that a lot of people care about streaming music on the Apple Watch, like, you know, or storing it offline. And they must just really, I'm sure listeners are in this camp, really like Spotify for some reason. That makes you not want Apple Music for, you know, so I don't know what that is, but I mean, even Apple Music is on Android, so it's really tough. Like, the closest thing to like Spotify walking I could get in is like if I was like deep in the Amazon Echo ecosystem, which I kind of am. I just happen to like use it with HomePod as well, but it's like, that's the only thing, because otherwise, like, Apple Music is Sonos works with Apple Music. It's in a lot of places, so I don't know.
Yeah, some people like to say that Spotify's like recommendations and discovery features are better than Apple Music's. I don't have enough experience with Spotify to say. Like, I'm a new user of Apple Music since the HomePod came out, really. But they are, I think, very comparable offerings, right? And
yeah,
I guess a lot of people just have inertia in that they have had Spotify libraries for years,
and it's not easy to move back and forth. Like,
yeah,
no companies, and like, there was a tool to move Beats Music to Apple Music because Apple, you know, bought Beats and released Apple Music. But like, there's no official tools like that they, you know,
it's in their interest to not let you move back and forth easily. So
yeah, I mean, I think the suckiest thing about Apple Music is that if you unsubscribe, after 90 days, they delete your playlists.
Mm.
So even if you subscribe again after 6 months, you have to rebuild your playlists.
Yep. And for Spotify, they've got the free ad-supported tier. But I imagine for streaming on the Apple Watch or for offline that you'd need to be a paid member for that.
Because they
do a lot of restrictions around that already. So maybe they'll release that and then people will just be upset that you got to be a paid customer. And then we'll see. Oh, it turns out that was the big issue, is that you've got to pay for the service. And people don't like that. So this also made me think on one more thing on the Apple Watch. We discussed last week or maybe before the infograph face in the watchOS beta getting way more complications from Apple apps. It occurred to me this week that there's one that's still missing. Can you guess what it is?
Podcast?
Yes, podcast.
Boom. Yeah, it's missing.
Yeah. So they caught up with the other complications that existed. But then the podcast is new to watchOS 5, but it has a complication on the other watch faces, but not on an infograph or infograph modular. And as I was like trying out some of the new complications that are in the beta, I was like, oh, I'm going to have an infograph analog face that has like a launcher for the workout app and the Nike Run Club app and the music app. But sometimes I want to run or work out to a podcast. I'll have a podcast. Oh, I can't do that because I use Apple Podcasts and not like a third-party one. So it occurred to me this week, they're catching up in a lot of areas on infograph for the apps that are missing, but not for podcasts, even though there are podcast complications on the other watch faces because it's new to watchOS 5. They like got those updated, but not this one. It's just like a different development cycle, I guess. But
Unfortunate.
But you're enjoying some of the new infograph complications, right? Like
I am. Really happy that messages is, I can finally put messages on infograph modular, because my default face at the moment, like I have like three faces that I switch between. I have activity digital, numerals, and then infograph modular. I've kind of gone off the infograph analog just because I think on the 40 millimeter stuff's quite small, and yes, I haven't quite found enough stuff to fit in those
on the 40 millimeter. It's like if they ported it to the old watches, like
yeah,
it's kind of like that constraint.
Yeah, and to me it feels like not perfectly laid out. Like it just feels slightly too compressed, and I struggle to find interesting things to put in the corners, like the curves. Like you put the weather, but then we've talked about before how the weather widget is kind of disappointing in the colors that it makes and stuff like that. So however, I do like infograph modular, and until the latest betas I had, because I didn't know what else to put there, I actually had two weather complications. I had the weather gauge
like high and low. Yeah.
Yeah, and the mid, and the one in that goes across the middle, which is hour by hour forecast for like the next 5 hours.
That's practical.
But now, yeah, so now thanks to the new betas, I now have messages instead of the gauge, and just have the hour by hour across the middle, which I really, really like. Because and the messages complication puts a number of how many unread messages you got. So if I've been getting some text or I'm getting some notifications and I don't want to respond to it right away, I just don't lift my wrist up. And then when I get a sec, I can look at my watch face and I can obviously get a red dot at the top to know I've got notifications. But if it's specifically messages, then I obviously have the number staring right at me that I can just tap and go straight in there. So I really, really like the messages complication.
Is this the first time that the messages complication can badge like that? Or like
no, it's badged on the other face.
On the other ones? Okay, I've never used it that way before. That's neat though. Like I hate badges, like the red badges with the numbers in them, but putting it in the complication is neat.
Yeah, like color matches just like dark gray text. Mm-hmm. It's green on green, basically. It's really nice, because I have my watch always on mute, and so if I'm doing something else and I get a tap, I'm like, no, it's a notification, but I might have missed if it was actually like a message or not. So then later I can just look at my watch face and I can see the number and be like, yes, it's a message, because generally messages are more important to me than anything else. Mm-hmm. So see the message and like, okay, I know I actually have actual messages to deal with, versus looking at the watch face, then maybe swiping down and scrolling through like different notifications. It's just a nice way of being like, yes, you've got new messages. Go here, go straight here.
See, so, for me, I've got messages also important for my watch, but I've got the dock or the side button that goes to the dock, the like vertical app launcher. This is like a screenshot in part. I've got that with messages. I think by default, it's like the most recent order is like how it is, intelligently. I hate that. So I've got it back to the old way, which is like manually ordered, and I've got messages on top. And it usually puts like now playing, like as a little preview back there if it's like active. But click that button, kind of like the original like friends circle, but it's like click it and there's messages and I can like tap in and like see multiple threads. So I agree that messages is important. I just do it a different way. But yeah, I like that. What were the three watch faces that said that you use right now the most?
Numerals, which is the analog one that only just that also has like the hours, like a digital write readout, and mm-hmm. the number goes around the clock face as the hours goes. That's like my kind of bare bones, like evening casual one where I've like. I'm just kind of relaxing at the end of the day and I just want to see something very plain. And then I have Activity Digital, which is I switch to that face when I know I really want to do a workout today as like maybe off my normal schedule. So it's kind of just like acts as a reminder that I might not get my my rings done in time. So if I put that there, when I look next down, I'm like, oh yeah, I still need to do this. And then my kind of default standard is Infograph Modular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nice. I like switching faces, but I don't like having like 10 loaded at one time. I like having like 3 or 4. And so right now I've got Explorer, Infograph Modular, and the Siri Watch face. And they're different enough that like my Infograph Modular is like the like, kind of like my new version of the Activity Digital face, where I've got my rings as the center complication on the bottom, within the workout launcher and the Nike Run Club launcher on either side of that. And then I've got the big middle one is Activity, like written out, you know, the numbers and the pretty graph below that, which I find really useful.
Yeah, the Activity graph complication there is really cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. And then in the top circle slot is the weather with the current temperature, then high and low. And lately, where I live, we've gone from like the 60s and 70s and 80s to the 30s and 40s and 50s. And it's cold, but I like the colors now. Like I'm beyond the green temperatures now, where I'm more in the blues. And it kind of matches the stand hours, like aesthetically pleasing. And then I've got, you know, the date turned on above that. But like that's my version of the Activity Digital on the Series 4. And then the Explorer, I've just got my Activity rings, the date in the top. And then I've got Carrot at the bottom for condition, with a condition, temperature, and humidity, which is 100% right now. And then the Siri Watch face is like still kind of aspirational. Like I wanted to do more. It does some interesting things, but I still don't get third-party apps in there. Like they can show up, but it's just tricky of like when they should or need to or actually do.
Yeah, it's not consistent enough for it to be useful.
Yeah, like things, the task manager shows up often in the all day or recently section, but not quite when you need it. If you have Carrot turned on, it's like they're always, no matter what. And so like you need to actually replace you know, weather with that. But then like some things that are neat about it, like you get your resting heart rate as a tile if you have it on, recovery heart rate after a workout, you know, workout recommendations like based on I guess time, stuff like that. So it can do some neat things. But like the Nike Run Club app is on the list of like, you know, toggle it on, it can show up, and I never see it there, you know. So I just keep checking in with it, but it's not quite where I want it to be to always use it. So yeah, but I love the feature where you can, you know, swipe from the edge and like change your watch face super easily. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that I mean, it's kind of funny that wasn't there at the beginning. Now, like, it feels so useful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just swipe, 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 swipe. But it wasn't there in WatchOS 1. It was WatchOS 2.
Yep. All right, let's do some iPad Pro check-in. So it's only kind of the second week that iPad Pro has been out for customers. And so I've got some more experience. I think last week we talked, like, I don't know, what was it, like a day after it came out? So it was.
Yeah, you didn't just got it, really.
Yeah, so it's pretty new. So I've got some more things. I mean, I went through my whole, like, post that I wrote last week of, like, impressions of the accessories and the iPad itself. But I've got some new things that a week has brought to my attention. The first thing is that kind of just like before, the keyboard, Smart Keyboard Folio, I'm taking it on and off like throughout the day based on like what I'm doing. And I love that about it. Like I'm a humongous fan of the Smart Keyboard with the Smart Connector, like no Bluetooth pairing and charging, snaps on magnetically, and you've got a keyboard there to go. Like, you never think about is it paired, is it turned on, is it charged? I love that. And the keys, the experience to me is really nice. And like even better on if you get the big iPad, the 12.9 one, because the keys are even larger. But I'm coming from the 9.7 inch Smart Keyboard, so the 11 inch is even, you know, it's better than the smallest one. But I find
how do you take your iPad in and out of the cover? Because I'm not actually, I haven't very little experience with a Smart Keyboard because I've had an iPad Pro for ages, but I never use keyboard cases with it. So yeah. Assumably it's magnets. So do you just kind of like pop it off? Is it that simple?
Yeah. I mean, it's just magnets. And before, like, the smart connector part of it was like the hinge where the smart cover would have connected. And then now it's like the three pins are in the back, but there's all these magnets around the whole iPad that also make it align the right way. And so like all you have to do is like put the camera where the camera hole is and the rest of it just goes into place. And so it's really, really easy to put on, and it's easy to take off too, but not like accidentally. Like it's strong enough of a hold that you're not going to like slide out of it on accident. But if you just like slide it out, like misalign the magnets a little bit, then it just pops off the rest of the way, like slides out. So that's, I found cool. That, you know, a keyboard case, I would never take it in and out of a keyboard case, but like Smart Keyboard Folio, it's kind of going in and out of like landscape iPad with the keyboard mode, where I'm like using keyboard shortcuts and like that kind of thing, to tablet portrait orientation in my hands, nothing else attached to it mode. And like, I don't leave the house without the keyboard folio. Like if for nothing else, it's the screen cover. And I'm not sure how I would like the new smart cover folio or whatever they call that. Like the smart covers from day one, or from iPad 2, day one.
Two.
Yeah. Were like totally genius. And I think those are a great idea. The folio version of those, I'm not so sure about when you've got the back covers too, like how, cause it still folds the same way. Like it's, you know, I'm not sure what, if they've added anything more there, or if it's like they have to do that because of the design of like the square, the boxy sides of it, because the first,
it's because they moved the magnetic connect, the smart connector, right? So they had to cover the back now.
Well, for that though, that makes sense for the smart keyboard, but for the smart cover folio, like, I think they've only done that for like security, because maybe the edge of it is, it would come off easier. Because like for the smart cover folio, you don't get the keyboard, you just get the foldy.
Yeah, you don't get any data, so I guess the
actually just covered.
Smart connector position doesn't matter.
It's just covered. But like think about the first iPad, the iPad 1. They had that awful like swimsuit, you know, case for it.
Yeah, the original iPad accessories are like hilarious when you look back at it. Like, you had like the typewriter keyboard dock, and then you had the terrible case, the black dock was like the Mac
keyboard, like that exact keyboard, but like in a dock
with a 30 pin on. Yeah,
yeah, which is kind of crazy the back of to it. Think about. But like the case was pretty. I think people just hated the case because it was like, it wasn't nice. Nothing was nice about it. And you like put it in there, and it was like, it was flimsy. And I think like the cover did a foldy back thing to just make it stand up too. But with the smart cover, it was like dead simple. It had a metal hinge that clipped to the side of the iPad too, and it came in like colorful polyurethane versions with the microfiber cloth. It was like the part that touches the screen when it's closed, and it has like the magnet to like turn it on and off, like sleep wake, which is so clever. And then there were very nice leather versions too. Like that was super nice. And then they changed those to cover the magnet part of it with material, which was like a little bit nicer, I guess. Because the magnet, you know, it wasn't as pretty.
It hit the metal bit that was a bit.
Yeah. And
industrial.
And then now, you know, and they've had this smart cover like every year since then, with like different limitations of like some have more colors. The big ones never have as many colors. Leather goes away, comes back, goes away. And then this year it's Smart Keyboard Folio. And I've not like bought one to try out, because I'm not going to like use it over the Smart Keyboard Folio. I love the Smart Keyboard Folio. But if I was like I've never bought an iPad without a smart cover. And, you know, or smart keyboard folio or smart keyboard. And I'm not sure I'd like the new thing, you know, because it's just not quite the same. You don't get the back of the iPad exposed in the same way. So I don't know. But I'm loving the smart keyboard folio. And like I said, it's coming on and off all like, you know, various modes, like how I'm using the iPad. If I leave the house, I've got it because it's the cover of the iPad as well. The pencil travels with me. And I found that, like, you know, I take my iPad into the gym as like my TV for the gym. So I'm not like watching the various news channels or like Lifetime or the cooking, you know, the food channel. I can like have my own videos. And I found that the 11 inch is really nice because it's like hidden within the machine of like, you know, the elliptical or whatever it is that I'm using without sticking out. But like for that, I'll bring the folio, but it's not like in keyboard mode. It's like just flip backwards. And it's just so that when I walk in, the screen's covered. But like for that, I'll leave the pencil like in the car. But as soon as I'm done at the gym, like the pencil just clips back on. But I just don't want to like bring the pencil into the gym, you know? And I found that to be just so nice that like the way that these accessories work together, it's such a big improvement to like before. Before I would never travel with a pencil, and I didn't enjoy using the keyboard cover as much because it added a lot of bulk to it. Like it was just heavier. It was more material, like physically more material. And now I've got a bigger version of the keyboard and it's less material and it's way nicer to use. I've found in one occasion, like I sold my MacBook and upgraded to a refurbished iMac Pro, as I mentioned last week, which was a pretty good deal, and I'm enjoying that. But I was away from home one evening this week, and a friend of mine tipped me the story, you know, heads up in the Nike app on iPhone, there are these new bands. Have you seen those yet? And I was like, whoa, I haven't seen those. And like, neither has anyone else yet, you know, for that matter, like in this space. And I want to write the story about it instead of hand it off to somebody else. So, you know, I took my iPad Pro and like, you know, took the screenshots from the iPhone and like used a shortcut to put the frames around the iPhone screenshots. And then on the iPad Pro, used Pixelmator to make it like the right aspect ratio and size for 9-to-5 Mac, and like wrote the story in the CMS on WordPress and like published it and did all the things that we needed to do with it like on the iPad Pro. And it wasn't like the fastest way to do it, but like I don't have a laptop anymore. And just because
that is real work.
It was a popular story too. It's like, so, and it's like, I thought about keeping a MacBook at home just because like, then I can like be on the couch and do work if I want to, like in the evenings. But it was just like, you know, I'm more productive on an iMac, like on a desktop at least. And so, I'll be tempted if I have a MacBook around. So like I sold it and I felt like I'd, you know, waste some money to keep it. So it was nice to get the money back from that. And then the iPad like, you know, came in handy when I was not at home, but I could write a story. You know, I was at someone else's house and it was like, oh, it's, you know, I was perfectly happy with it. And nothing about it was like this iPad versus another iPad, except for the fact that like the keyboard, you know, happened to be on it at the time. But it's just like really nice to use. And the same with the iPhone X, you know, still feels new today. It's like it's such a big leap in terms of like the design, like how you move throughout the, you know, system with fluid gestures and everything. It's just like, it's a pleasure to use now. And that makes a big difference of like how it makes you feel. Like the original iPad and like iPhone had that like feeling about it that it was like a leap forward technology, you know, in technology, and that influenced how you felt about it, not just what you could do on it and how you could do it. And I'm finding that with this iPad, it's the first time I felt that way in a while about an iPad. That's really, really, really nice. Other thing is I've upgraded the iPad from the base model 11 inch since I bought it originally, like pre-ordered it. And I really didn't think I would do that. Like I know I like to like, you know, have Apple devices that I enjoy and like, you know, not always like the base model of it. But for every iPad I've had, I've had cellular sometimes, but I've not ever really like splurged on storage because I've not found that I can get a lot of use out of it. But I've been enjoying this iPad so much that like, it's like, you know what? I'm really liking this. My last iPad was 32 gigabytes. This is 64, so it's already an upgrade. But like, I wouldn't mind having like taking this thing a little bit more seriously. So I returned the one that I ordered and got 256 storage. But then I had that for, you know, a few days, and then I was going around with the iPad everywhere, and I was using Hotspot, and I was like, this is kind of flimsy, and like I don't like using Hotspot. Really, like it's kind of a pain. So then I went into the store and I returned the 256 and also got LTE. So I told you, I was like really trying to debate, like, do I want LTE or do I want more storage? And like the obvious thing there was like more storage because every day you can benefit from that. But then I was like, I'm using this thing like a cellular iPad. I'm just using Hotspot, and that's kind of annoying. And I wrote the story on Wi-Fi, but like if I were not, you know, on Wi-Fi, then it'd be kind of nice to have the iPad. So, now I'm like without an iPad because the LTE one wasn't in stock around me. So it's coming tomorrow. So I'm going like 2 days without it. But it's just, even the 2 days without it, I'm like, I've got no buyer's remorse about this product. Like I want a better version of it. And so that's why I've upgraded like the storage and the LTE. And it's like, you know, you can't do that like a year later. You can't add to it. So you got to do it when it's new. and I'm really feeling good about it.
So we're 2 weeks in, and you've already upgraded twice.
And I no longer want to look at the price tag. Like, I didn't feel great about the price originally. Like, they're more expensive this time, and I do not want to like look at the total that I spent on the iPad this time. I just want the experience. I'm like, you know, I can afford it, so it's not like, you know, I'm not giving up anything to afford it. But it's not a pretty price either. Like, it's not what I would want.
But there is like a meaningful message in that you kind of got the entry one because you were like, but then you were so impressed by it that you ended up essentially going up two tiers, right? And one in storage and then one going up to cellular. So,
yeah.
Like, obviously, you're always changing your products around, but
in this case, it's
there is actually like what normally happens is you move from like you'd like change your iPad and you go and get a MacBook again. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you change form factor, whereas here you're just getting a better version of what you had because you actually were surprised by how much you liked it, essentially. Yeah.
And with LTE, like, I'm you know, you spend $150 to get the ability to spend $10 a month to use it away from Wi-Fi. And like that. So I was really kind of against that, thinking like, this is just, it's more expense. Like, I don't want to spend more, but like it was the feeling of I'm on this thing, like using it away from home and really enjoying it. And I'm only able to do this because I'm paired to my iPhone. And like, I wouldn't mind not knowing where my iPhone is right now, you know, and not going in the settings and like pairing to it and that kind of thing. And it would be great, like, if the iPad worked like the watch does, like, where if your phone's nearby, the watch doesn't use its LTE, it uses the iPhone. Like, but Apple's not going to do that with the iPad. Like, they've got no reason to. They've got LTE versions. So, you know, I can't wait for it. It comes tomorrow, and I'll have my iPad back. But it's been stuff like that, and the Paper app by 53, or now it's called Paper by WeTransfer, which is a terrible name. It's a really good app, though, if you like, you know, drawing.
Wait, what's it called?
Paper by WeTransfer.
I did not know that they got bought out.
Yeah, 53 was like its own company, and they made Paper, the drawing app, and they had...
Yeah, Paper's good. I like Paper.
Yeah, they had a stylus called Pencil, and it had an eraser on it. And, you know, but so they updated their app, Paper by WeTransfer, and it's just not catchy. They should just call it Paper now, or still go by 53. But they updated their app to support the new double tap feature, where you can double tap the pencil and switch to the eraser. And like in other apps, like in Notes, you can have it be the color palette or the last tool that you used or eraser, which is the default. In Paper, it's only eraser, but it's useful for that. And you can use your fingers to like smudge things around. And so it's pretty cool. But I found like that app update just pushed me even further into like really enjoying the iPad. So like drawing, and that app is like a level of approachable that you don't get from other apps that are like too basic or too deep. Like Paper is like a pretty good balance for me. And it's like neatly designed too. So it's kind of a pleasure to use in that regard.
Yeah, Paper is really, really, really high like production value as well. Just like you have these little books of your drawings, and you open the book and it like kind of springs open. You see the pages and you can dive in. Like, and when you're mixing colors, you have a little like color mixer that you can swing around. Like, there's definitely a thing where if you've never owned like an iPad Pro with a stylus before, and then you get one. Obviously, you had the previous one, but like just talking to the wider, there's an, like, you just want to draw on it for like, there's this halo period where it just feels so good to just draw on this digital screen.
Yeah.
Like, and you just, because I had that with mine, right? Like, I was so happy. And if you just spoke to me in December 2015, I'd have been saying, I'm becoming an artist, right? Like, I was drawing every single day for like the first 2 months. And it does wear off. Like, there's novelty value to it. And if you're like, I'm not a very good drawer at the end of the line. So you get, there's limits to what you can try out, and then you get stuck. But there's something really, really organic and fluid, and just, it just feels so nice to do it. Like, and Paper's like a really good app for it. I think Procreate's good as well, but there's definitely a higher learning curve to like getting the brushes right and stuff on Procreate.
For the drawing aspect, I'll say this, like, if you found yourself like in school doodling on like test papers and your notes, like, you enjoy that, like, you got pleasure out of like doing a drawing that way, then the iPad can be the same way. Like, you know, you're reading a book, you're browsing the web, now you're doodling, you know, like with a pencil that like attaches magnetically.
You can do like Procreate on a sidebar, be browsing the web, and just do little doodles on the site, on the split screen app. Like,
That's really nice. And I keep a folder of, you know, I think I call it like Creative or something like that, but it's like Procreate, Linea Sketch, Adobe Sketch, which all of these things have like different things about them that I enjoy. But paper,
have
like,
you, do you use Notability at all?
Yeah, I got Notability.
Yeah, that one's quite good if you're just trying to do, like, you know, like your quote unquote margin sketches, because you can just do black pen and just doodle around, and then you can undo, and thus there's a lot of depth to it. But if you just at the high level, you just Notability, pen, and just draw around.
Yeah, and then I mean the Notes app is not bad. Mm. Like, it's, you can, you know, tap. This has been true for a while, but you can tap the screen of the iPad with a pencil, and the Notes app launches just from tapping the screen. And you can have a setting where I think it's a toggle in settings, but you can have the pencil be the input, like for drawing, and your finger not draw. Like if it's touch, if it's not the pencil, it doesn't draw. It's like,
yeah,
it's manipulating the screen in other ways. So that alone is really nice. I love this thing for a combination of reasons. And like, only one of them is I can do what I did on my laptop for like a quick story. And like, there were things about writing on it that were flimsier, you know, like hyperlinking multiple, like text selection was a tricky thing. Like, and it's not because it's harder than like iOS. Like, in an app, it would be fine for me. I'm really good at it. But in WordPress on Safari, more than one word was it was buggy is what it was. It didn't work as intended. And I needed to switch to like the text mode of the CMS and not the visual mode to have a better experience there. It's like, that's not tricky, but like the iPad.
Yeah. Like if you were doing writing on iPad long-term, you really need to find a solution that lets you write in a native app, because the web CMS stuff is like really bad. So I was actually surprised at how unjaded you were when you told me you'd written this on the iPad. I was like, and then you were like, oh, you wrote in Safari? And you were like, yeah. I was like, well, fair enough. Like, because you had a block quote, you had links. Like, it was, it wasn't just like a full paragraph dumped of you writing and then pressing submit. Like, there was actually, you know, a decent amount of rich content in there.
The only thing that I didn't do, which we usually do on stories, is and probably not you, but like if you write regularly, then you have a subscribe to 95 Mac on YouTube button at the bottom with a video, just to like have more content on it and promote our YouTube channel and Jeff Benjamin's work. And for that, I use Text Expander on the Mac, and it's like I have the HTML of like what that is with the link and everything as a text snippet. And I type in, use sub, and it expands in the HTML section of the CMS. And then I go back to the visual section, and it's like, it's there formatted correctly. And then I paste in a video, which is a pinned tab of our YouTube channel. So it's like quick to like grab a video, put it in there. On iOS, like I could reproduce that with the text shortcuts, but I've just not made them yet. And then there's no like pinned tab really. It's like just shortcut, you know, bookmark. I could optimize for that on iOS. I just hadn't taken the step. So for the story, I just didn't include a video. And it was like, I don't usually write in the evening on 9 to 5 Mac. Usually I do in the daytime. And so this was like, I just liked the content of the story. Like, it interests me. So I was like, I don't want to pass this one off. I want to do it myself. And if I was on an iPhone only, there's no way I would have done it on my iPhone. I'd just pass it off. And honestly, like if I was on my Mac, like I wouldn't have traveled with it to a friend's house. And if I was at home, I don't know what I would have done, but it was neat to see the story, like, you know, show up on The Verge and elsewhere too, because like anyone could have like sourced it on their own, I guess, but like because it was an obscure source, you know, an announcement in the Nike app on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I made like the screenshots, you know, with the iPhone border around it. You know, it's like easier to just like to use that than download the app and like go find it yourself, I guess. So it was neat to see like a story made on the iPad, kind of on the web, you know, at other publications with a nice via, you know, it's cool stuff. A couple more things here on iPad. I have found myself taking my muscle memory of force touching, 3D touching the Safari icon to open a new tab on the iPad. I'm like, I want to open up a new tab and like search, like be in the search field and start typing.
Oh, like the home screen quick action stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I found myself doing that on the iPad, and of course it isn't there, you know, and there's no equivalent of it. Like, you just open Safari and like, you know, new tab or tap in the search field. And that's like the one thing where I'm like, it's not the iPhone. There's no 3D touch here. So who knew I was a huge 3D touch fan, but like for that, at least that one action, it's my muscle memory on the iPhone. And, you know, it's not there on the iPad. And I've also looked at Instagram a lot less, because like the Instagram experience on the iPad is like either the website or the app in portrait. And it's like, no, that's if I'm in landscape, I'm just not going to bother. Like, I'm not going to like, you know, feed the habit, I'm kind of breaking the habit. So no Instagram on iPad. I'm using Instagram less. Who'd have thought? And then the last thing is, like, I really hope, you know, there's this big conversation that everyone's having right now about iOS 13. Like, we hope that iOS 13 makes the iPad more like macOS in ways that you can use it. I hope that iOS 13 makes the iPhone XS Mac, like the big size iPhone, this would apply to the XR, I guess, too, different than the small size iPhone, than the 5.8 inch iPhone. Like, you know, have a unique feature about it that makes it feel like it's worth being the bigger phone than just like your content is a little bit larger. Something like video picture in picture would be just fine. But as I'm using the iPad more, out and about, and I'm just like, I don't, the phone right now is like, I'm doing things different, like on it that are not on the iPad. Like I take pictures on it more often than I would on the iPad, of course. Like it's more natural. And I'll plug out of the CarPlay. It's all like that. I use it for a phone call to my ear, but like browsing the web, like even like messages and email, like I'm enjoying that on the iPad more than on the phone right now. And so I wish that the bigger phone, like having the bigger phone meant something more than it does right now.
Yeah. Yeah. More than just showing you one extra row of something.
Yeah. If even. Yeah.
9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Capterra, the free resource for finding the software you need for your business. Have you ever been assigned a new task at work with no idea where to even start? We're all bound to face unexpected hurdles at work. Don't let finding the right software be one of them. With 2019, fast approaching, you don't have time for unexpected hurdles to derail you. Find software for your business fast with Capterra's new free ebook, The Big Book of Free Software, which you can download for free at capterra.com/happyhour. Capterra.com is the free resource to help you find the software you need for your business. And with helpful information on over 300 different software tools, their Big Book of Free Software can help you find a completely free tool to test today. And it's absolutely free, so you won't have to ask your boss for a penny. Whether you're looking for a new project management tool, recruiting software, or an email marketing solution, Capterra's Big Book of Free Software has something for you. Visit capterra.com/happyhour today to get your free copy of The Big Book of Free Software. That's Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/happyhour. Capterra.com/happyhour.
Yeah. It's like iOS is still incredibly tied to its roots as a 4-inch phone OS. Like
3.5-inch phone OS.
Yeah, 3.5. Yeah. Yeah, but then obviously when they made it 1/2-inch taller with iPhone 5, it was like an obvious progression, right? Because it was only changing. It was changing one dimension, and you could just make the scrollable content bigger.
Yeah, and you eventually got rid of 3.5-inch phone. Like, we've not yet gotten rid of 4-inch phones or 4.7-inch phones.
You know? Yeah, but so much of the design, and it's not just the OS, it's just like the apps as well. Like, all of that is still from heritage of smaller phones, skinny columns, inflexibility. Like, we haven't grown out of that, and you've seen both sides of it. When you used the iPhone SE for a while, it felt too small, mm-hmm. and now because they've kind of started to move towards like the 4.7-inch phone being the de facto with bigger tiles and bigger content. But like, if you go beyond that, the apps are still rooted in, they're not that much different than what they were 10 years ago.
Right.
Like, most of the apps have not moved on that much, and this problem is obviously gets more and more prominent as the phones get bigger and the XS Max, you start to hit against it, and Apple doesn't unlock OS features like video picture in picture or maybe some split view stuff. But I think that'd be weird on the phone. You know, I think video picture in picture is like an obvious thing.
When you move from iPhone 4S to iPhone 5, like, you had the extra row in every app, and it was like, is a little bit more content. And when with the 6 and 6 Plus, like, and landscape, on the Plus model, you got like controls. They were kind of actually really bad, and they took them away eventually, so because people didn't like them. But it was something. And like, I feel like on the Max phone, like the least you could do is in the music app on the now playing screen,
landscape.
But something even simpler, not make you scroll up for shuffle and repeat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can fit the album art. the now playing bar, the title of the album or the song, the artist and album. The play controls the volume. AirPlay, the dot, dot, dot button for more actions, and not make you scroll up to shuffle and repeat or like show up next or like lyrics. Like you can show a little bit more of that, but like they make the version that runs on the SE scale up to the iPad Pro, you know, cause like it's the same bar there. Like I guess on the iPad, like it's taller. So like it's like ridiculously long and maybe they do fit it without like having to swipe up. But like
on the iPad, they show you like what you'd expect to see.
Yeah. But on the Mac, like the Mac phone, don't make you swipe up to see that. Like they used to do that. They used to say like on this phone you've got more space, and maybe it was before like iOS 7 and they could like individually design like pixel, you know. And now they don't do that, but like they could make those controls show there, or like on in the Photos app show like where you swipe up and you see things. Like don't make you swipe up, just have them be tappable on that screen, and then you feel like, oh, on this phone I can see more without moving around as much. Like it's just there. And
On the 6.1 inch and the 6.5 inch phones, there's so many places where, like, rather than showing you more content, they just add more spacing between things.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, that's great. and this is a problem on the phone, but it's an even bigger problem on the iPads. Yeah. Like, the Messages app is a great example on the iPad Pro, right? Mm-hmm. You have a sidebar. Cool. We got a sidebar. And then you have the main window. But on the iPad Pro 12.9 inch, I'd say about 40% of that main right hand side is just blank space.
Do you still tap around for like the photo picker and like the camera app and all that?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah. The bar is like, they have these guides where they want to make it so you don't have so much width. You don't want to have a line of text span so wide that your eyes have to like move your head to read it. Mm-hmm. So they compress everything down into like a readable margin. But rather than using the spare space to put like an extra sidebar of other controls or other things, just make blank space everywhere.
Time indicators, like when you swipe over and you can see that.
Yeah, that's not there. You have to swipe to see it on the iPad. Yeah. And they even have, like, if you click on your name and you click info, you get like a sidebar for a user, which is recent photo attachments, your current location if you're sharing with them. But on the phone, how do you get to that? You have to press a button to reveal it. On the iPad, if it was done natively, if it was done for the iPad first, it would probably be on screen. Like, you wouldn't have to dive in to see that stuff. But because they're just bringing most of the iPhone stuff over without really thinking about it, then all of that stuff is extra modals that you have to click on and dig into.
Yeah, at most what the iPad 12.9 gets is, well, I see you've got it in the notes, is Mail and Notes have three panes, and you don't get
that. Yeah, but only Mail and Notes.
Any other apps, and on any other iPad size, even the 11-inch, which could probably pull it off.
Yeah, and Notes is a good example, right, where one of the columns is just your folders list, if you're in three-column mode. But I don't think many people have that many folders, so it just ends up being a column with one thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better than having two columns, I guess, but it still feels a bit stupid. Like, what you'd rather have is, like, all of your notes editing controls would be on, like, a right-hand bar, and then you'd have the content in the middle and you could do stuff like that. But, again, because it's just pulling up the phone, it's all in that little stuff in the bottom, and you have to go in this like action sheet menu to find all these random controls that are just not on screen at once. Like,
yeah, on the Mac, I keep the folder sidebar off because I have one folder called Notes, and then there's recently deleted. I don't want to see that. On Mail, though, I keep the mailboxes folder open because it's like loads of folders there that help me manage my email. And like, so, and I want that on the 11-inch iPad. Like, it'll fit. But, you know, that one is useful. This should be more.
Yeah. I have Mail on three-column mode on my 12.9-inch iPad because I do have so many mailboxes and I have like six email accounts set up on there. Mm-hmm. But Notes, it just feels stupid to have it there. But then it also feels stupid not to use the column because then you just have a really, really wide second, you know, two-up mode. And a really dumb example of in Notes is that on the keyboard bar, you get all these text controls, right, for like left, right, bullet points, font size. But to get to all that, you have to click on this button on the keyboard, which then pops up this pop-up modal, you know, like a popover with all these options. Like, on an iPad Pro that's 13 inches big, you could fit all those controls on their own bar. And, like, get rid of all the folder sidebar and just have all those options on screen at the same time.
Yeah, and this is more than like, can the iPad read a storage drive, like a hard drive attached to it? And like, can you do windowing? Like this is more than that. This is like, even when you do all those things, like these are still issues on the iPad.
And, yeah, it's like the sophistication of the apps, not the operating system.
Yeah, and what's looming over all of this is that iPad apps are like they're in some ways setting like the precedent for what a Mac app is because of Project Marzipan, where you know the news app on the iPad is the news app on the Mac, and the home app on the iPad is the home app on the Mac. It's like same for stocks and voice memos. It's like if you replace Calendar on the Mac with Calendar from the iPad, like you'd have that modal problem again.
Like Calendar's a great example, right? Yeah. So on the Mac today, you can see like a month view of your events. If you click on one of the events in the grid, it brings up a popover that floats over the top and it shows you your event details. But then you can drag that popover with your mouse and it makes its own window with window controls. So you can have it open whilst you go to a different month in your calendar, whilst you check something else in the calendar app. On the iPad, you get that month grid, you show the popover, but you can't drag it anywhere. It's stuck and you have to dismiss it to go anywhere else, and then you've lost all your context. Like, if you want to compare your next week to the current event, like maybe you want to copy the event details into the week after, on the iPad today, is your best option is to, like, take a screenshot and like show that in a side. Like, there's so much stuff where, yes, Apple could add like a third column. So you could do three app split view at the same time, but even in the apps themselves, they need to get richer. And music's another great example. Like, if you replace music today with iTunes on the Mac, like, if you just put music there instead, you'd lose so much stuff, right? And I'm not talking about all the random device syncing. I'm just talking about music, like, yeah. Sorting by columns, showing more than just the name of the name of the song and the duration in the list. Like, on the iPad Pro 12.9, you go by a song view, you see the name of the episode, you can see the name of the song and the duration, that fills the entire width of the screen.
Yeah.
On the Mac, you can put like an album, you can do that like album art view where it shows the album in a column, and if you have 10 songs all with the same album art, it doesn't repeat the album art, mm-hmm. but it makes it bigger and it uses up more of the space. That kind of stuff doesn't exist on the iPad. It's an iPhone list view stretched wider.
Yeah. The new way that photos album types are listed is like a great example of that. Like, it's the description, it's an icon in the description of the type, like live photo, slow motion, and then it's like stretch, and it's like a quantity, and like,
and on the 12.9 inch, my eyes cannot read the media type and the number in the folder at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so wide. If you're reading video, selfies, live photos, portrait, this is on the albums tab, my eyes cannot see the number of things in those collections without moving my eyes.
Well, like, and it's also hard to correspond which number goes with what. Like, if it were, yep, a spreadsheet, which it looks like, without like several columns in the middle, you'd like invert the colors of like the cells. It'd be like gray, white, and you'd be like, okay, that's gray over there, this is gray over here. You know, it's far apart, but you can match it up. Because this is like the iPhone UI on the tablet. You know, they've not done anything like on the Mac, where it's like an album in a grid. And this is like, I think this is a step back from iOS 11. then it's not designed for iPad. You know, and
what does the Mac Photos app have that the iPad app doesn't? Sidebar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple loves putting sidebars on all their iPad apps, yeah. But Photos, no sidebar. Like,
yeah.
And that's a really good way of moving between your photo library, but the iPad doesn't have it. Like, you can't do the thing where you scrub on the album with like your finger to see different things inside it. You can only tap on it and do nothing at all. Like, one of the features I really liked from iPhoto was, if you had an event, it would be like a stack of pictures, and if you just hovered your mouse over the stack, it would like show you all the different pictures in there, like chronologically, as like a little skim. That'd be a great feature to put on the iPad, but it's not there.
Yeah.
Like, And you mentioned, like, you filed a radar this week about photos not having keyboard shortcuts on the iPad.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the things that I keep myself busy with on the Mac is, like, in my spare time, is I have a large library of photos, and I love to organize them. And I love iCloud Photo Library because you can organize on one machine and it syncs all the edits, deletions, albums you create, all that between devices over the cloud, whereas before you had to, like, plug in with the wire and sync it if you even bothered. So I've got 23,000 photos and 2,000 videos. And I love on my Mac to, like, it gets worse every year in the Photos app. Like, they change something that annoys me. But, like, I love to, you know, keyboard shortcut, use keys to, like, delete photos, navigate between them, that kind of thing. And on the iPad, I was just, like, taking the same muscle memory of, like, I'm in the Photos app. Let me arrow to the next photo. Oh, you can't do that. Let me hit delete. No, you can't. Backspace to delete a picture. Like, spacebar, return. Nope. Keys don't do anything in the Photos app on the iPad. So I filed a radar so I'd be allowed to tweet about it and complain. And the radar that it was a duplicate of was very, very old based on the number. It was like how many years ago?
It was like at least 3 years old, but yeah. Probably even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big picture point of, like, the complaint here is that iPad apps, not just the OS, but the apps themselves from Apple are not tailored iPad, like, to the iPad specifically. This is, you know, we're looking to iOS 13 for hope, but, like, iPad has been around since iOS, like, what, 4.2, so, like, the iOS 4 era. This isn't brand new. Like, the iPad has been around for a while, and this is true of all iPads, even the cheaper ones. And it's, like, 7 was kind of the reset for iOS, but, you know, we're getting like, it was, like, 1 through 6 and, like, 7 through 12. It's, like, the same amount of time, and you know,
the iPad hasn't really moved on.
iPad was in better shape for iOS 4, 5, and 6 than it was in 7. And it's not really, like, the best thing that's come to it is split view.
Yeah.
Slide over, the multitasking stuff, you know.
If they added split view in iOS 6, that would easily be far better than what we have today. Because the iPad apps back then were, like what you mentioned earlier, pixel for pixel artist layouts of, like,
yeah, the
really
music
rich
app was
controls.
Terrific. It was
yes,
not the skeuomorphic stuff. Like, ignore that, but just, like, how are things laid out? Like, where are yeah. they? It was terrific.
It felt more like iTunes, right, with actual mm-hmm. sidebars, and you could see, like, a concert now playing along the bit. Like,
yeah,
the iOS 7 stuff. I iPhone-ified all the iPad apps because iOS 7 was such a rush. They were moving around so quick, just doing all this stuff for the iPhone that the iPad
iOS
got 7, left behind.
The first iOS 7 beta was literally iPhone only because the iPad version wasn't finished yet. Like, you had to wait for beta yep. 2 to get an iOS 7 beta. That's a long time ago. And it's like, yeah. We've not caught up since then. And we're almost to the next, like, you know, same amount of time from, like, 1 to 6, you know, 7 to 12, here we go 13, like, you know, and maybe there's, like, there's not a big rumor looming of, like, there is home screen redesign, but that's it. There's not, like, attention to detail in every app on the iPad, you know. Even some of these other things people want, like storage support, like, maybe they come because people want them right now, but there's not this big rumor of, like, the iPad is going to get the attention it deserves in terms of, like, the detail, you know. We're not getting
yeah.
right that.
I'll pick out one more example with, like, the storage thing, right? Everyone's like, oh, if they just let you plug in a USB key, everyone will be happy. It's like, well, when you plug in a USB key, that will show up in the Files app, right? The Files app at the moment is terrible. Like,
it's iPhone size scaled up, right?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it follows the formula of basically all iPad apps that Apple does nowadays, which is, like, it's the iPhone app and you get a little sidebar. Mm. But, for instance, renaming a file, right? On the Mac, you can rename a file without making your whole screen disappear. Right, you just press enter and it makes that text editable. You can rename a file and you can get on with your day. And say if you're looking at the name of the one above it and help you name the one below it, right, on the iPad, if you go into rename mode by tapping on the file name, it blurs out the whole rest of the screen and brings up this modal thing where you can type in the name, like, and that's because that's how the iPhone works. And it yeah. makes sense on the iPhone because the screen is small, yeah. but on the iPad, I'm looking at a 12.9 inch screen. It's so big and they've just blurred everything out. Like, you can't do more than one column. You can't sort by different things. All the folders look ginormous. You can't get a glimpse of what's inside the folder without tapping on it and then having to go back. You can't have two folders open side by side. You can't, like, and some of this is OS, but a lot of it is just how the apps are done. And the best experience you can get on, like, you know, kind of seeing the future of the iPad is Safari, because they've done some great stuff in Safari where you can have like two tabs side by side. You can just drag them out and pop them on the side. You can, if you open Split View with another app, the splits of the two tabs disappears. But then when you get the, when you take away the Split View with like, say, Twitter, mm-hmm. the split of the tabs comes back again. And you can do all the tab switching. You can go out to the grid view. You can rearrange it, which is something the Mac can't even do.
Like, That's right.
The iPad feels so good to browse the web on. Yeah. And you can, when you I want to look at this website and this website, you just drag it to the side, it pops up and it sticks there. You can collapse them back down. If you open two apps, if you open a different app, the Split View intelligence disappears. When you get rid of the Split View app, the splits of the iPad Safari don't just go into nothing and they remember it and bring it back again. Safari feels so good on the iPad.
The only bad thing about Safari, you know, aside from like how some apps refuse to serve the desktop, or some websites like YouTube refuse to serve their desktop version reliably, even though they can, is that Safari is so top heavy with the search field and the status bar above that. It's like you lose a lot of screen real estate to that. Yeah. You know, and on the iPhone, it goes away when you swipe around. But on the iPad, it's like there. That's the worst thing going for it. But like there was. I hadn't done the side-by-side Safari tabs before on my other iPad, like the old iPad Pro, and didn't bother. And what is that, new to last year or so? Or 10?
Yeah, I think it was 10?
It was 10 or 11, but it wasn't 9. I didn't realize like how fluid it is. Like it preserved, like you said, it goes back to 1 if you have another app over there, and then it goes back to 2 if you lose the app.
And it's not just one extra window on the side. You can have two independent tab bars. Like can have 3 tabs on the left and 4 tabs on the right.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like their own section. It's like their own window almost. Right. Yeah. That's nice. It's like that level hasn't come to the other apps. And I would say we don't like we just spend a lot of time talking about like how nice, you know, you like your iPad Pro hardware. I really like the new iPad Pro hardware. Like and the things that you can do with it isn't just like that the hardware turned off is nice. It's like there are very cool things that you can do with it that you can't do on iPhone and Mac. But it's like finish, you know, we say this to like influence the discussion because so much of the conversation right now is like we want storage to work, you know, we want it to be,
or we want to put widgets on the home screen, which would be really nice.
Yeah,
but there's so much more to the story than just being able to put the weather widget next to your, you know, your dock. Like, sure. Mm-hmm. It's just so much more beyond that.
Yeah, it's within the apps. It's intricate ways that the apps work, and like the system, you know, backs it up. But like, and like, there's a little bit of annoyance about this on the Mac. Like, iTunes is no one's favorite app. But like in Safari, if you're downloading a file, you get you can pop over, have the pop over progress indicator, and you can drag it out and like move it around. And in Safari and iTunes, you can't. Like, you can pop it over, and it's like part of the window. It's like, that's because iTunes doesn't get the attention it needs, and like it's probably going to be replaced soon with separate apps from the iPad. So it's like we are asking for the iPad apps to get more attention and detail, so that when iTunes goes away and they get replaced, like this is what replaces them. You know, the music.
Yeah, have you ever tried to search for an email on the iPad in the Mail app? Like, it's terrible compared to what you can do in the Mail app on the Mac. Like, on the Mail app on the Mac, you can do all sorts of different Boolean filters. You can search by category. You can drill down in specific folders. The iPad one, often you can just type in a text and it doesn't do anything.
There is something I noticed this week on using the iPad that it does better in Mail than the Mac does, though. You know how on Mail on the Mac, when you have messages threaded, like the every message before is indented?
Yes.
And it gets very narrow, like a newspaper column at the bottom. I was working with someone in PR who had an attachment for me to see, and they spelled out for me, I've attached a release for you to see. It's like, okay. So then I scroll past like the 3 months of correspondence to the very bottom of the window, and then there was the attachment. And at that point, like the previous messages were like super narrow. And later on, I needed to see that I was on the iPad and needed to go back and reference that. And it was right there attached to the window I was in, like the same day message. It's like, that's a small thing, but like it's better on iOS. But like search has been a feature of Mac OS Mail that's gotten better, like in recent versions even. Not like a recent, but like, you know, a few years ago, search was a big part of it. And those have not come to iOS yet.
Yeah, like iOS 13 is getting bigged up now as, everything will get fixed in iOS 13. Well, A, it won't, right? It's a long road. And B, It's more than just operating system level stuff. There's apps as well. And this becomes even more important when those apps come to the Mac, because you don't want to lose functionality on the Mac side. And hopefully, maybe, Marzipan, the Marzipan project stuff will result in a way of them bringing more sophisticated apps to the iPad. But then also, what they're going to do about the phone, because they still have to worry about the phone first and foremost. It's their biggest thing. Like, because even if you put the iPad audience and the Mac audience together, it still pales in comparison to the phone market. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops for sure. But like, there is no magic solution, but I just wish we were already down the road of stuff getting better. And Safari really, like, browsing the web, excluding websites that serve you phone versions on the iPad, feels so much nicer than browsing the web on a Mac. Like, it just does. And you can, and it feels powerful as well. You can do drag and drop. You can drag things out. You can do the two tabs side by side with all the different windows in between. Like, it just feels fantastic. And if they could replicate that across every app they do, like, third-party apps, they're always going to suck, right? But whatever. if Apple can just lead the way with their own apps, and GarageBand is pretty good, Safari's pretty good, Mail, it's getting there. But then the rest of it is just like iPhone with a sidebar. Yeah. There you go. Yep. Ship it.
Yeah, I will say one thing is Apple seems in recent years pretty receptive to feedback, like taking the temperature of like public conversation, like what are people talking about, you know, in the press, online, customers, users, what feedback is there, and then how can we incorporate that into what we do. And you know, we've been saying this for a few weeks now, like the new accessories for the iPad, like how they all work together is like totally based on feedback from like the 2015 versions of those products. Like, you know, it's like the only, everything about it is based on what, like complaints of the first versions. And I feel the same way about recent, like every watch version, like hardware and software. Most of it is like people have complaints strongly. They feel strongly about the friend circle of the side button. So that goes away. You know, we want a podcast on the Apple Watch. There it is. You want streaming here, you know, here's streaming music. It's like, you know, there are a few things left for that. Like I want audiobook streaming, but like there are so many things that have been like on my feature request wish list. Like we talk about it, you know, they eventually come, and I hope this is one of those things. And I love more people to be discussing this than just asking for the iPad to be more like a computer or a Mac in terms of like how it works with files and in the home screen arrangement and window. Like, I want those things, but I think you've got a great point about the quality of Apple's apps on the iPad too. And looking at it and being like, oh, that's made for the iPhone. You just brought it to this iPad. You know, that's got to be resolved, especially before you port it to the Mac. You know,
like you can make the home screen better, but if the apps you launch into are still the same, like you're still going to feel held down and constricted.
Yeah. So I can't wait for my iPad to get back. It's such a funny thing. Like, but if you didn't like the iPad, like you wouldn't spend the time with it that you do to have it, you know, to know the system in and out, to know what you want it to be, you know, to be better about it. So,
yeah, like these always come off so negative, but it's like the iPad is so good when it's good. Right, like the best bits of the iPad feel way nicer to use than any part of my Mac.
Like, there's virtually no competition for the iPad. Like, there's not another tablet that is like in the same ballpark. Like, this competition is the Mac or you know, maybe PCs.
Windows laptops
or
phones, because obviously big phones can also compete.
Yeah.
In media, because at the moment the media centric stuff is pretty good on a phone by itself, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, it's well, like
that speaks for
if they made though. Every app as good as Safari is, right? There's a baseline, right? Make every app as good as Safari, the iPad as a whole will be feels 5 times better than it does at the moment.
Yeah, well, you just go back to the events of the early iPad events, like when I think it was Phil Schiller who was like showing the
iWork suite and the original iPad.
Well, that, but like even third party apps as an example of like this is the Yelp app on Android tablets, and it's just the phone. It's literally the phone app. Big, and then this is the Yelp app on iPad. Like, this is what developers are doing, you know, be excited for it. And
that was the pre-iOS 7 days.
Yeah, and that matched Apple's work then too. It's like, And now I think, you know, Twitter was great, had a great app, and now it's like, you know, Twitter's got a phone app on the iPad. It's fine as a column. It just needs to stream your timeline in real time, pinned to the top, but not as a full screen app. It's like, you know, it used to be a columned app with nice features, but I hope that this becomes a thing, because like we don't have giant complaints about Mac apps, like Apple apps on the Mac, except for like, you know, messages is pretty rough. Like it gets the job done, but it doesn't. It's not a feature parity with iOS in lots of ways.
Yeah, if I just look at my dock and think about the current Marzipan, you know, ports, messages is the one where it would get better if they just ported the iPad app, right?
Totally.
The rest of them, I think the Mac would still be more capable, more functional, and better on the Mac platform. But messages is so rough at the moment that messages and iOS unifying that with the Mac version would definitely be an improvement. But elsewhere, yeah, it's going to need more than just bringing one over and plopping it on the screen.
Yeah, and messages, this is between messages and photos, but like it ends up in messages. There's a bug, I think it's in Mojave only, that is when you try and take a photo from the Photos app and like copy and paste it, or maybe even drag and drop it, but at least copy and paste it into Photos, it'll just like send like pending, sit there forever. And you can drag the picture out to the desktop and put it in messages and it sends fine. It's like that's a new one. That's a new bug. and it's shipping, you know, it's been around for months now, like since all the betas. No matter like if your photos are in the cloud or like local, it happens that way. And then you can like, and the thing is when it happens, you can't like send text after it either, because it gets like bottlenecked and you have to go just, like, to another device and say, hey, I'm stuck on sending a photo, and there's no like resolve to it. You gotta like, you know, quit.
It's 2018 and I'm stuck sending a photo.
Yeah, yeah. And like, That would be resolved, I think, with a port from iOS to the Messages app, and then you could do all the effects, and you could, you know, pick a photo from the Messages app and not have to like go to another app to find one, and a lot of things like that. But every other app, it would be kind of risky right now to bring the iPad version over, until the iPad feels like, you know, and with the Marzipan apps aside from Home, they redesigned them. They redesigned News. They brought over voice memos and Stocks, and those have new designs, you know, as brand new apps. But it's like that was because they were bringing them to the Mac. So you'd think that if they were going to, you know, when they bring more apps from iOS to the Mac, that they won't be the phone versions like they are now in so many cases. But you never know.
Well, and even the port, even the adjustments they do make might not be significant enough. Like News on the Mac versus News on the iPad and News on the phone. As we spoke about before when we did our big run at Marzipan, if they just made News on Mac, like without any connection to the iOS stuff, it would look very different and probably be more capable, right?
Than
what it is.
That's true.
So there's so many question marks here, and like there's definitely an optimistic path, but also there's like the reality of we had major quote unquote iPad updates software wise with iOS 9 and iOS 11. But even with those in place, we still have so far to go.
Yeah, the why to all of this, like you said earlier, like the iPhone is always going to mammoth the Mac and the iPad combined. And it's like when you look at the quarterly numbers back when they, you know, before the next quarter they stopped giving out numbers for devices, it would be like 50 million iPhones sold in the last 3 months and like 8 million Macs, you know, 5 million Macs.
Not 8 million, yeah, more like 5 was like the high end.
Yeah, like 5 million Macs, you know, 5 million iPads, 10 million iPads.
Yeah, like 5 to 10 million iPads. Normally 10, it was like, average was like 10 million iPads, 5 million Macs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like this quarter, they'll probably have like 80 million iPhones.
Yeah, right. They're not close numbers at all. And that's like the why behind all of this. But they do make and support all these products. So that they've done in the past a good job of keeping every platform, you know, well attended to. And they're very opposed to a toaster fridge where you have one OS that runs on everything. So if they're going to take this route, then it needs to be more attention to detail in all the apps on all the platforms. So anything more to add this week?
I think I just end with a nice analogy. Like if you have an allotment, you could make the allotment twice the size, which is making the OS better, or you could put better flowers in the ground, which is like making the apps better. And you need both, right? Like it's not one or the other.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's a very weird way to end the show, but there you go.
Yeah, and I'll end on saying I really cannot wait to get my iPad back this time with LTE. I'm so excited. I'm really, I enjoy it. And part of the appreciation for it is like a little bit of hope that like iOS 13 gets better, but like don't buy an iPad because you think it's going to get better in 13 unless it actually gets better in 13, you know?
Yeah. Cause if 13 ships in September, there'll be new iPads in October. Like,
probably. Like there was,
and you don't even know what will be in 13 yet.
That's right. There was one Quo note that was like, analyst Ming-Chi Quo, that referenced future iPads, and it was like, late 2019, early 2020, like he even acknowledged like there's not really a cycle for him yet. It doesn't have to be annual, but maybe. But yeah, that's a good point. You know, if there is nice 13 stuff, there'll probably be a new iPad to go with it. So buy on what you get today, not on what you think might happen based on probably not even rumors at this point, just expecting like hopes and desires. So.
Pipe dreams.
All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast of this week. You can give us feedback at happyhour@9to5mac.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you are?
BZA Maya.
And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.